This is the Applying Sports Science Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Greenwood, and it's great to have you here as part of the podcast family. Presented by the Human Performance Center as part of the College of Health Sciences at the University of Memphis, we're here to talk about all things sport, science, and the real things that contribute to athlete success. And if you want the cheat notes, it's about more than just the science. In episode 17, we chat to Australian basketballer Mariana Tolo. Mariana started as an Australian Institute of Sport scholarship holder and has gone on to become a two-time Olympian, two-time World Championship representative, including a bronze medal in Turkey in 2014. Mariana has played professionally across the world with stops in Australia, the US, Turkey and France, and her experience of different levels and quality of support based on the variety of teams and countries she's played in make her insights into supporting athletes really interesting. Mariana uses examples of support staff who made a difference in her career and shares the small details that change support from good to great. She highlights communication and relationship building as fundamental to engaging the athlete in the process of improving, making special note to take time to explain the what and the why to make sure the athlete feels comfortable. As always, we'll delve into her thoughts and opinions and lessons learned about applying science to sport to help us all be better at what we do and ensure we make a real difference to athletic performance. Here we go. Hey Mariana, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you, Dan?
Good, good, good. It's lovely to see you again. And I see you're living the good life there in a beautiful hotel stuck in Sydney.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird kind of come down after the Olympics, but I'm not doing too bad, actually.
Yeah, it could be a worse place to be right now. I wanted to talk all things sports science and you as an elite athlete. And as you listed your credentials off, two times Olympian, two times World Championship representative, plus experience across the world playing basketball. I almost thought about the idea of, do you ever get a say in the performance staff that get put around you in preparation as an athlete?
No, not really. In a team sport, I think, because there's so many different players and opinions, that it would be hard to kind of juggle that and make the right decision in terms of getting support staff that everyone wants. Everyone would have their own people that they would know and trust. But, yeah, it's normally appointed by the head of the sport. So for us, that would be like the high performance manager.
What's it like sort of having someone appointed to you and saying, this person is now going to be responsible for your S&C, your physio, your skill acquisition, your biomechanics? Is it weird someone being given control like that over your career?
It is and it isn't, because I guess we're used to it because it's happened to us over and over again. We've had that happen multiple times over our career, you know, getting different support staff put in place around us. And it's always a bit of an adjustment because people like to do things different ways. For S&C, for example, they'll have completely different programs or ideas of how to get the best performance out of you. So there's always a little bit of a time period of adjusting to what each sport support service staff member does and how they operate. And it's really important to kind of try and figure that out and figure out your relationships early so that you can kind of get on the same page and start working together efficiently towards your goals.
There was a lot of good stuff in there, Mariana. So I'm going to try to unpack multiple bits. I love the idea of that. The S&C coach is a really good example. Like sometimes you get S&C coaches who love like Olympic lifting and some who hate it and some who love like body weight stuff and some who love dumbbells. How do you as an athlete almost maybe adjust to that new regime, or do you ever feel like you can push back against what they're selling?
I think a little bit. Part of me always wants to be respectful and understands that the people are experts in their field. So they, you know, really know what they're talking about, what they're doing and what they've learned about and how they're putting it into place. But on the same hand, I think as I am the athlete and the person who it's applying to, each coach or support staff has to realize that every person is different and the same thing doesn't apply and doesn't work for every person. So a good example of that would be the SNC. Actually, for me this year, prepping for Olympics, our team SNC coach was Brent Gorris, who is based up in Townsville, and he's great. And but I felt like for me, I needed someone who I could interact with every day. And so I talked to Brent about being able to use an SNC coach in my based in my location and work with them on a program. And he would kind of just oversee it and check in with me. And if I had any questions or concerns, you know, I'd be able to talk to him. And I was messaging him all the time anyway. But I used Luke Neville, who was my SNC coach in ACTAS, ACT Academy of Sport, and he would oversee me in day-to-day stuff. And Brent would always check in and he'd follow my loads and track my progress. But in terms of programming and yeah, filling in my day-to-day, Luke would help me with that.
And that's, you say you just love that sort of almost one-on-one connection or just that daily sort of motivator there beside you?
For sure. Many reasons why I love that. And yeah, like you said, it's that connection between somebody. I think when someone starts to know you and what makes you tick, that can kind of, that helps to get the best out of you. And I know Luke is really into psychology and he loves thinking about that sort of thing and how to approach different people and how to get the best out of people. And that combined with, you know, the daily programming and someone is in there with it, with me, like Luke joined in multiple conditioning sessions with me just so I'd have someone to work out, and knowing that he understands the pain that I have to go through and how hard it is really, really helps. And, you know, helps me to push myself a little bit further as well as add a bit of competitiveness because you want to be your coach, right? So so that was really good to form that close relationship with him.
I really like that idea of that close relationship that you build. And I feel like that's something that perhaps an misunderstood part of sports science or performance support, that you truly do have to get to know the people you're working with in order to get the best out of them. Is there a process that you go through in terms of letting people into your bubble?
I think I'm pretty open at letting people in. Just, I guess, through different ways of communicating, whether it's face-to-face, over message, just spending time with people, it'll kind of become a bit more comfortable and relaxed and open to different sorts of conversations. They don't always have to be the fluffy, nice ones. Sometimes it's really hard, and I know when I feel comfortable with someone is when I can share my vulnerabilities, and times when I'm struggling or, you know, when I'm feeling really good, I'll really like talk to my coach about that or whoever the support staff is. And I think that's really, really important because sometimes it's not just about being the specialist in your area. Sometimes you have to be a psychologist as well and just listen and kind of get an insight from your athletes.
I mean, I'm thinking back to when we first met, and that was because you were recovering from ACL surgery and you had sort of a team put around you to help you return back to elite Mariana, or maybe rebuilt 2.0 Mariana. There's almost this element where it's almost at your lowest where you're getting the most help. So it does require more than just the science, right?
Definitely, definitely. And I've been through two ACL rehabs and they're, you know, long 9-month journeys, and it's really tough at the start, and it's, you know, it's a long road ahead. So when you have someone that is there and committed to you and committed to helping you out, that really helps me to put my best foot forward and invest in that relationship, no matter what it is. And all those different relationships do make a difference and are really important, because you get to connect with a few different people from different experts in areas. So, you know, when I was going through rehab, it was the physio, strength conditioning coach, nutritionists, yourself in skill acquisition, basketball coaches, and everyone has an impact, psychologists as well. Everyone has an impact and is really important part of the process and the journey. Some people or staff will spend every day with, some it's once a week, some every now and then, but they're all really, really important. And I think the connection that you form with someone, yeah, like I said before, really, really helps to not only get me invested, but give myself faith in the person that they're understanding and listening and want the best for me, because that's what I'm looking for. I want to get through this journey. That's my goal, to get to the end of the 9 months and be where I was at before or better than where I was at before. And in order to do that, I need the best from everyone as well. And I think when staff understand that, and I understand that, can kind of come together in a really nice way.
Do you have a specific example of almost someone that's done that sort of really well?
Yeah. You know, I was fortunate to rehab at the Australian Institute of Sport both times. And one person who was one of the people that were really good at it was Tony Ward. He was our physio, my physio at the AIS, and took me through my rehab process. And I think he was a really good physio, great hands-on work. But one thing that really makes him stand out above the rest is communication. I think the way that he talks to me, and I'm someone who also loves the plan, so he is great at planning, would set out everything for that 9 months and really made me understand what this journey would look like and how I could get through it. And that really, really helped me and was the best thing for me. And anytime that I kind of would have a hiccup or something would pull up sore, he'd be great at just kind of settling the situation down and analyzing it and coming at it from a problem-solving view and kind of talk you off the ledge, you know, if that's what you needed, or pump you up and say, you know, you really got to go do these exercises if that's what you needed. He was great at really putting that plan together in place and showing me, like, if you do these steps, you can move on to this. And once you nail that, you can get there. And then before you know it, you'll be back on the court playing, smashing it. So I think that's definitely one of the best traits that he had as a physio. And then also in that rehab process, I worked with Jan Legg, who is my strength and conditioning coach at the AIS. And she played that role, like I said before, of psychologist. You know, there were some times when I was really struggling and she'd be like, just have the day off. You don't need to come in today. You know, one miss session out of 9 months is not going to hurt you. It might actually help as well. And even like stuff in my personal life, I was felt comfortable enough to share that with her, and she helped me when I needed it as well. And that made all the difference in the world. It really made me trust her. And so then I did whatever she wanted me to do or told me to do, because I had the faith in that she wanted what was best for me.
So it sounds like really seeing you as Mariana, the person, this is what she needs on a given day, rather than seeing yourself just as the injury that we're rehabbing, right?
Exactly, exactly. Seeing me as a complete athlete with many things going on, not just on the basketball court, but away from it as well. And knowing that I am different to the next athlete that comes along, and we might operate in different ways or listen in different ways, or you know, our strengths and weaknesses are different. And so pushing those right buttons and knowing when to push it is really important too. And yeah, I think she did that well. You know, in the gym, as an example, she'd always be like, all right, and now you can add some weight. Giving me attitude at times when I'd need it and go, oh, yeah, you're right. And then other times when I need like a shoulder to cry on, she'd be right there.
That's really special. Because I feel like that, especially as you go through those long-term recoveries, that relationship, that bond does change and does form over time. And I think it becomes a really, you know, there's an opportunity to build sort of really special, bonds between people. Like, it's a pretty rare opportunity.
It is a very rare opportunity, and you really get to spend a lot of time with those people, and, you know, get to know their families and support networks as well, because it changes your life, you know, in a really, really good way if you have a good experience. It can also do, I assume, the negative, the opposite, if you have a negative experience. But I've been really fortunate in that I have had great people to support me.
Do you think you do have to like the people that you're working with, or can they just be good at what they do and, you know, move on? Can you get that best effect even if you don't necessarily like each other?
I think you can, if you have the understanding of that, of each other, that you have the respect for the person, that you know that they're still trying to get the best out of you, and that it might not be in an easy way to deal with, or you might just have different ideals or different ways of approaching things than they do. But if you understand that they're still trying to get the best for you, and if they are still trying to get the best from you, then I think you can kind of just go, yep, I'll listen to what they say, because they're trying to do the best for me. And I guess when you have differing opinions, or when you're struggling to get an idea of what and why they're doing this, or you just don't understand, I think that's when barriers are put up and you're less likely to take in the information that is given.
That makes sense. So you don't necessarily have to be best friends, but you do have to acknowledge one another, respect one another, and sort of agree that you're both there for the same purpose. And as long as that's clear, you can carry on. You don't necessarily have to be best buddies, so to speak.
Definitely. And to have that understanding of the why are we doing it this way? Why not some other way? I think that's really important as well.
You mentioned that idea that you're working with different people. How do you know that we do know our stuff and then we're not just full of shit?
I guess, like, again, being lucky that going through the rehabs at the Australian Institute of Sport, I know that there have been so many checkpoints that people have to go through to be able to get that job in the first place. It's a really prestigious place with a lot of people trying to get there. So I know that they'll have that knowledge base and the skill set to be able to do something. But I guess in a traditional setting where you just Joe Blow walking off the street and going to trying out a different practitioner, I think that's when I'll often get advice from family and friends. Say, for example, when I was choosing my surgeon, I heard from multiple different people. Our Opals coach at the time, Brendan Joyce, said, you know, I've contacted people the two best surgeons in Melbourne are either Hayden Morris or Julian Feller. And that kind of got me started thinking about different surgeon options. And then I figured out who had had surgeries with either surgeon and talked to different people and got their opinions and how it went and what I felt would suit me best. And then I ended up choosing Julian Feller, which I'm really, really, really grateful I did. He was the best surgeon I could have hoped for. So, yeah, I think getting advice of colleagues, friends, family, other athletes is really important and can kind of cut through those barriers sometimes of discovering who is good and who is okay. Because I think often a lot of the time everyone has the same qualifications, and then how do you choose? And it's from recommendation of trusted sources that I would choose from.
Yeah, I like that. That makes a lot of sense. I want to switch now to the idea of when you're getting tested in the lab or when people come to test you on court for different things. I'm almost picturing sort of almost like a VO2 max test or when you get to your DEXA scan done. What is it like being tested by strangers, so to speak? Is that weird?
Yes and no, it can be weird. I think because just of the nature of it, people grabbing your fat and measuring how much you have all over your body. It is a weird sensation, but at the same time, you know that they're there doing their job and they've got a job to do it, and that's why they're there. I think it is important that when you're looking at test results and doing testing, it's often talked about that you should only compare your results to yourself because everyone is different, everyone has different expectations. Sure, you might have some benchmarks. So, for example, with the Australian Opals, we have, you know, standards of what you get on the yo-yo test, endurance test of bigs position, guards position, point guard position. Everyone has different standards, but you want to compare to yourself, not with anyone else in the team, because it's all relevant for you. It's about what kind of shape you're in compared to how you have been before. So I think it's important for people that are testing you to acknowledge that and constantly talk about that, because it is a tough thing to go through and it can be quite confronting because, you know, I've heard it before and I've said it before, having a DEXA scan and having 20-something percent fat and then someone next to me saying, oh, I didn't expect your result to be that high, you know, and it kind of can cut you a bit deep even though, you know, there's reasons behind that. So, yeah, it's really important to think of that.
I feel like basketball is almost the perfect sport to highlight that. Especially these days in basketball, there's such a different range of, you know, what wing players means. The benchmarks, I feel like at times are almost, they almost don't do justice to almost the individual and where they're at.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I've talked about this a lot with my strength conditioning coach, Luke, this off season prepping for Olympics, and how, because I've often said, you know, basketball is such a skill-based sport that it's hard to attribute any changes in performance to things like strength and conditioning or, you know, how you are physically. But saying that, talking to Luke about it, and, you know, it's all about the 1% is that little bit of change that you can make that can perhaps increase your performance. And that's what it is all about. Plus with the S&C, there's the element of taking care of your body and making you sustainably be able to be on the court over and over again without getting injured. And that's a big thing as well. But yeah, I think it's something that is interesting that everyone is so varied. There's there's the skinny, the big and strong, the fast, the slow, and you have such a wide range of different bodies and people, but it doesn't mean that any one is better than the other. It's about making it work for you or for your athletes.
It's almost a challenge that I think all performance support staff and sports scientists have as well, the idea that, yes, I can measure you doing this, but I can't necessarily equate that to wins, especially, or points scored, especially in a team sport like basketball. I think it's sometimes we draw a pretty long bow to say that this is affecting this, 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 which is changing this outcome. Do you ever think we almost take that for granted sometimes that this will change this, or have we got that sort of right that we can track those changes? I think I'm talking myself in circles here.
Yeah, I think it's you can see, I think the thing that you can see is when you do make progress, and that's through testing, obviously, the before and after. So, you know, my jump is increased from this to this, or I'm able to dribble the ball down the court faster than I was before. Or I can make this many shots in a row compared to what I was before. You know, it's, you can see those changes, but then when it comes to something like a team sport and basketball, where there's an offense and a defense and there's so many different aspects to it, it's not just about one person, it's about five players plus the other five on the court at the time and how they interact and the structure that you go through in each game, the different plays and offense and defenses. It's hard to attribute success or failure to any one thing. I think, and I've said this before, in terms of like making a team or getting picked on a team, there are certain things you can be really good at and things that can be really impacted by your stuff off the court. Say, for example, someone who as a basketballer, as a role player and is a great rebounder, that's something that you can really change in that you can work on your jump ability in the gym, on the court, and practice that skill really constantly to get better at it. And if you have that role and that you're the best in the country at that, then you might get picked on the team just for that reason. Say for example that you're really strong as well, that you can, no one can get past you defensively, you're like a brick wall and no one can get by you without some sort of injury. That's something that, you know, you can kind of really work on as well and test within your strength in the gym, off the court. Speed, the same thing, if you're really, really, really fast. But at the same time, you have to be fast with the ball as well. They don't always translate. So, yeah, I think I'm talking around in circles as well now. I think there's some roles that can be really attributed to certain things, but the whole team concept, the whole team play, I don't think it can be nailed down to one thing because there's so many different factors that come into play.
Yeah. I think we both successfully talked ourselves in and out of the concept quite well. And I think it accurately reflects sort of where the whole industry in a sense is, that we're all trying to measure things as best as we can on court, but there's still just this level of thing that is sport that is still naturally hard to attribute winning to, right?
Mm. Yeah, exactly. I think how do you attribute winning? Is one person having a 50-point game going to happen all the time? No. And how can you repeat that again and again and again? It's difficult and a lot of different factors come into it. So I think it's about trying to get some sort of consistency in performance, and what that looks like for every person, for every team is very, very different.
I feel like that's actually a pretty key message for support staff as well, in that yes, I'm your S&C coach, or yes, I'm your skill acquisition coach, but being aware that, you know, Mariana, the athlete, is also being asked to do this and this and this during the day. She's also got to go to this session as well. And that, like you said, sometimes, you know, lifting weight today is not the most important thing. And I have to respect and understand that all the other pushes and pulls that are going on in your life, that, you know, I can't get too focused on just that pure almost numbers or science chasing, that I do have to respect that there's a lot of things going on here, and I'm just a part of it rather than the answer to all the problems.
Yeah, for sure. That is a really important message to send, in that it's like team sport, right? One person is no more important than the whole team. And it's the same when you're a support staff. One discipline isn't more important than the rest of them. It's a combined effort. And when one part is falling away or you're struggling in one area, it's important for everyone else to kind of pick them up and realize that, and try and help as much as possible in whatever way that means necessary. If that's giving a day off, it's giving a day off. Or if it's applying your recovery principles, then that's the time, your time to shine. You know, it's about getting that sense of belonging to a team. And I think that's also a really important fact to talk about. Is one thing that made Tony Ward also really good was his communication with not only me, but the rest of the support staff as well, making sure that everyone was on the same page and working together with updates, checking in, asking other people for advice. He would never set programs for me. He would go to Jan, and Jan would be in charge of doing my strength and conditioning aspects. And then so whenever I would have questions about that, I'd ask her, or he would, you know, refer me to someone else that I needed.
What does it mean to have a coach supporting you in your off-court work, or your work with a scientist, or your work with a support staff? Can you almost talk me through, I guess, what that relationship then is with the coach and your support team, or you, the coach, and the support team? How integrated is that, or is it quite separate?
I think from my experience in the past, it has been separate from my viewing. I know that behind the scenes, a lot of work goes into it and a lot of communication happens about what's going on when. But I think it's important that the coach leaves the other experts in their field their own job to do and leaves them to perform to their best, having the faith and the trust in that they're doing the best for this athlete, for our whole team. But I think that relationship needs to be important, where they communicate with each other. And then the coach also really needs to buy in to whatever is happening, because they need to understand that it's a part of the process, or that this is trying to help the athlete get better. Because without that, then they'll start to question it, start to think it's a waste of time, and won't be letting the athlete grow to their ability. They'll become a block in that sense. So in order for that to work really well, yeah, there has to be trust in both the coach and the support staff, the scientist, or whoever is trying to help an athlete with a specific thing or skill. Yeah, there has to be that connection, but also the trust.
I'm just thinking back to something you said earlier about almost the nuances of basketball, especially positioning wise and physically wise and skill wise. Do your support staff need to know about basketball in order to help you, or can they not know about basketball and still provide some help?
I think you need to have some degree of knowledge in basketball and what happens in the court. For example, my physio with ACTAS, Dan Sheehy, he doesn't didn't really have much of an idea of basketball, but and so he, because when he was programming me to come back from my plantar fascia issues that I had this year, and I was asking him questions that like, what can I do in this training session? Is there anything I need to stay away from? Because he didn't really have that knowledge of basketball, he went to Tony Ward and asked him for advice. He also asked me if I could film a session or if he could come and watch a basketball session so he could see what kind of movements I was doing during the training session and to get more of an idea of what limitations I needed, if I needed any. So I think you kind of do need to have a little bit of knowledge or try and find some about basketball, but it isn't necessarily the most important thing, because you can get by just with your knowledge of movement or in your area, what is important skill to have or what is, you know, like a psychologist, for example, they're not going to know every different sport or what goes on with every athlete, but they will have a sense of, you know, competition and what that looks like, how it feels and the stresses that you might go through.
With the idea that they don't necessarily have to know all about it, especially to start with, but have an openness to wanting to learn about it. Is that fair?
Yeah, exactly.
You've spoken a lot about team, a lot about, you know, the team that's around you. How should a scientist go about integrating themselves with you and the team as it exists already?
I think, first of all, it's important to establish communication. Who is the person that is the go-to? So normally there's like a team leader or someone that is in charge that kind of oversees all the support staff, and it would be about establishing the relationship with that person and kind of finding out what your role would be, I assume within the team, and how much contact you will have. And then in terms of establishing the relationship with the athlete, then it's just up to making the most of it whenever you get the chance to interact with that person. And constantly, you know, continuing to have that communication back and forth between the athlete, but then also, yeah, the head of communication or the head of the team as well.
I also wanted to go back to something you spoke about getting your fat prodded by random strangers and having people make comments about you and your body. How do sports scientists make you feel more like a person and less like a guinea pig in that situation? Do you ever feel like you're just sort of a hunk of meat, I guess, being passed around?
I think when I don't feel like I'm a hunk of meat, it's when people are just willing to have a normal conversation with you, just asking about, you know, how things are going, what have you been up to, or whether there's something been in the news, just normal human interactions that help you kind of get put at ease by just knowing that, you know, you're a normal human being too, as well as us. That really helps. And kind of even, you know, I think another thing is just overly communicating what you're doing and the purpose behind it. I think in everything in life, if we know the reason behind why things have happened or why they're happening, then you kind of form a bit more of an understanding and you're more willing to accept it. And so as, you know, you're taking the fat, saying, okay, I'm going to do these areas on your body. We're measuring, you know, the amount of fat adipose tissue that you have around. And then we'll let you know what the score is afterwards, kind of thing. And something simple like that, but it's really meaningful in that it gives a purpose to why you're there and what's happening. And I think it gives you comfort knowing that it's not just a total stranger just squeezing your fat cells.
When I was doing my ISAC accreditation, I had to get a certain number of people to go through it, and one of the people I got was my wife, and she still hasn't forgiven me for it. She still brings up to this day.
Oh, no. That would be fun.
Sorry, honey. Oops. I really like that idea of just, you know, sort of over-talking through what's going on and over-explaining why we're doing things. So I think usually if scientists try to over-explain it, it'll almost get to a point of where it's just enough explanation so that, yeah, you do feel part of the process and you do feel like you're sort of being appreciated for what you're doing rather than just being sort of shoved and told to do this, told to do that, almost like you're back in primary school or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's about having that adult-to-adult relationship where you're both doing a job, and the more comfortable that you're made to feel when that job is happening, the more you'll be, you know, relaxed and the results will speak for themselves. So, yeah, I think it's really, really important that you just think of it as a human-first approach.
Are there any terrible questions that people have asked you to try to make you feel comfortable? I'm thinking like, I guess my first thought is about the weather, but maybe it's like some a comment by someone like me who has no idea about basketball and tries to pretend that they do know. Have you got any examples of shocker questions that we should definitely avoid?
Just the height thing for me, because I'm 6'5", I get comments every day on it. I'm like, just don't bring it up. Ha ha, yes, I'm tall. Yes, I play basketball. I know. So yeah, you just don't need to mention it. I think that is fine. And I'm all for a chat about the weather because I hate the cold and I love complaining about it.
Said like a true Canberran, I love it. I ask everybody that comes on the podcast to almost explain what sports science or what good sports science means to me. So I'm going to ask you for three words that you'd associate with a good sports scientist or a good performance staff member.
Knowledgeable. I would say knowledgeable, practical, and friendly.
I like it. Yeah, I like it in that order as well. That's a really good one. Justifying you can help, showing you can help you in your actual sport, and then actually just being a nice person and helping Mariana, the athlete, through that process rather than just anyone else. It's a really nice one. I love that.
Exactly. Yeah, I think, knowing what you're talking about and then how you can put that into practice, really important, and then doing it in a way that benefits everyone. I think that is the goal.
So on the topic of friendly, I wanted to bring up the concept of Adam Gorman, and he must have had you guys doing some weird stuff, right, in terms of skill acquisition. Can you give somebody on the outside what that was like?
He definitely had us doing some weird drills, but we loved him because he always had this huge smile on his face, and it was like he was testing us, but in a good way. It was really positive because you knew he'd come up with some really funky drills and exercises for us to do, but we were just willing to go with the ride and see how it goes. And sometimes it was good and sometimes it was like, what are we doing here? But I think everyone enjoyed that experience and really valued him because of it. And, you know, it made it fun whenever he'd turn up to a practice session and you knew you'd be in for something today. You didn't know quite exactly what, but I don't know, some of the drills he had us doing involved like big Swiss balls often, either hitting us with them or getting us to attack one and shoot into one, or drills where we'd have to make a certain amount of passes. And yeah, it was really cool stuff and exploratory stuff. And we often talked about it as a team afterwards, how cool those moments were.
was it just the idea that you were doing something different that was fun, or was it just the almost excited, almost childish way that he introduces it all?
Definitely both, because you could tell he was passionate about what he was doing and that he was trying and experimenting with different things. And so that kind of made you love it a little bit more. And then also in basketball and in any sport, I'm sure you get to a stage where you've done a lot of the same things over and over again. So anything new that's introduced or a different way of thinking about things is sometimes a relief and sometimes really cool to see and experience.
I love it. Absolutely love it. So I guess as we finish off today, is there anything that sports scientists and performance staff as a sort of collective can do better, sort of almost as a group? Is there something that we can do more to help athletes like yourself become the greatest versions of yourself?
I think sometimes as athletes, you don't always get the information filtered down to you. So it would be great to have that form of communication where, you know, if you have a study or a set of information that you've kind of developed and come across, and then you normally pass it on to the coach, and sometimes they choose whether they do or they don't filter it down, but just to have that kind of information trickle down in some way is really beneficial, because sometimes you go through some things or some tests and you're like, why am I even doing this and what was the purpose of it, and you don't see the real benefit. To have that trickle down effect, I think, is really important. And then again, like I said, the communication of why, the purpose of it, and the practicality of it, and what you're trying to achieve through it, and how it's going to happen. I think that is really important. And trying, I think, I don't know. Yeah, I think sometimes we don't often interact with scientists in basketball as much as we could. So just trying to have an impact and discussions, open discussions with coaches and athletes about how we could get better. And I often think this basketball hasn't changed much over the years. And I don't think there's been that many technological advances. So it is an area where I think we could get some ingenuity and some changes into the game and the way we think about and approach things. So it's a really big opportunity, and it would be cool to see something happen in that space for sure.
I think they're all really, really nice points for people to think about. And I especially love that idea of, I know sometimes we'll, you know, do our testing, write our report, the coach will get it, and the athletes will never even get even a bit of information, no matter how much the coaches sort of digested it. But yeah, there is, often is that, you know, the coach might change something in training without necessarily telling the athletes why, or because it was because of that testing. I agree that message all the way through is super, super important, because otherwise, yeah, why am I doing this? I don't understand. Oh, and now we're back again to do more of it. It's like, we didn't even get results last time. Why are we doing it again?
Yeah. Or even the option sometimes of getting it, because not every athlete wants to know the information, but some might do and some might really benefit from it. So why not have the option there?
Yeah, I love that.
I think that another thing for scientists or experts in their field to consider is that you have to be willing to adapt on the fly, because your preconceptions won't always be what you think they are. You might go in expecting one thing and it's completely different. So you have to be willing to come in with an open mindset and ready to learn and grow and adapt to whatever situation there is to get the best out of that situation.
So with our final stop, Mariana, what advice would you give to a young sports scientist to help them learn, improve, and add value in the future?
I think the first thing would be to watch and observe what has been happening around the sport previously and at the current time, and try and think of ways to make an impact and to make a change, and then to communicate it, to ask questions, ask lots of questions, talk to lots of different people. It doesn't have to be people in the sport. It could be people outside of sport and what they think and what their assumptions are. And just soak up as much information you can, and don't be scared to approach athletes. Sometimes they can be a bit scary, and some might be more open to it than others. But if you never ask, you'll never know. So, feel free to open that door.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Love it. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I'll let you get back to your cell there in your hotel in Sydney. And thanks so much for being part of the pod. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for having me on, and all the best over in the States.
Thank you.
Awesome.
That was the 17th episode of the Applying Sports Science podcast. A huge thanks to Mariana for her honesty, time, and experience, sharing her realities, nuances, and unwritten rules of applying science to sport. Proudly brought to you by the Human Performance Center as part of the College of Health Sciences at the University of Memphis. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. As always, keep up to date with the Human Performance Center on Twitter and help us keep evolving that relationship between science and sport.